a big focus we have is don't try and innovate in every possible way. Focus on where you have a speciality, where you have some special insight. I mean, don't try and, you know, reinvent the wheel everywhere. That's too hard.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, we're chatting to Angus Short, the founder of Food Marble. But first, two quick favors to ask you. If you're listening on Apple, click subscribe. And if you're listening in Spotify, click follow. This helps the pod to grow. And speaking about helping the pod to grow, if you refer the pod to people, you'll now get prizes. It's as simple as that. There's a link in the description below. If you click that, you'll get free mugs, t-shirts, and even consulting calls with me. Quick thank you to our sponsor and partners, as always, Kiri's Car Store. Carstore.ie, the number one place in Ireland if you're thinking about buying a car. Carstore.ie, we'll chat a little bit more about them later. Today's guest is Angus Short, the founder of Food Marble. Food Marble is a food digestion device. It shows you the food you're eating, how it's impacting your body or not, as the case may be. They've just finished a massive fundraising round. They're just about to make a big push into America. And this is the perfect time to be talking to them, as I have a feeling these guys are going to blow up. Here's my chat with Angus Short, the founder of Food Marble. Angus, welcome to the pod.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to chat to you, and it's good timing. You guys had a bit of good news recently.
Yeah, so we raised some money just kind of coming in at the end of last year, early this year. So we're finally closing that round out. So that's going to set us up for the next year or so.
You got to tell us how much. You can't just say some money.
Yeah, so we raised 2.5 million euros. Okay. And that's going to... And actually, we're probably heading into another fundraise soon. So things are moving fast. Up to 28 people now. So we're kind of, we're on a bit of a hiring marathon at the moment. So we're coming in with about 25 at the start of the year and like hopefully getting up to about 50 over the year. We've got some interesting stuff going on.
So what's all that money for?
Yeah. So launching in the US is one of our big ones. So already probably about half of our customers are US based. To give you a sense, we'll be probably tracking for about 2 million euros of sales over 2021. So US is a big one for us. And I guess the scope there, both from a consumer perspective and from a healthcare perspective is huge. So we're trying to focus in as much as possible this year.
I suppose we better tell people what you're selling.
So Food Marble, we've developed a breath analysis device. So it's to help people identify what foods they're able to digest, with a real focus around food intolerances or food-related, digestive issues, which is, you can think of things like IBS, different food sensitivities. And from a healthcare perspective, we're looking at things like SIBO. So these are conditions that will be familiar to a lot of people who have those conditions. But the interesting thing is, even though it might be like a quarter, people are affected in a very significant way by their digestive health, it's not something that's really talked about. Mm. So you've got that gap in terms of awareness. When we go to speak to somebody, there's probably a 50% chance that they really understand what we're talking about because they're affected or maybe their partner or, close family member. But then you'll have people who are just like, they don't really get it. They're like, that's an interesting niche or whatever, but it doesn't seem as big. So that's definitely a factor.
I think that's great though, because if you get it, you get it straight away. If someone has been affected, like my wife has had issues on and off for years, and literally only 6 weeks ago we both went off dairy, wheat, sugar.
Right.
Like sledgehammer to the nut. Just did it, and now we're off everything. Yeah. Just to try see what could be.
Yes.
And
you know, I completely get it because she's had that issue for years. And again, it's kind of one of those kind of uncomfortable issues whereby people don't really feel 100% comfortable yet talking about it.
Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of where it started for me too, because it was really my wife now and, my girlfriend at the time. So she was struggling through that process. And it's funny, like you would expect where you've got problems that affect a really large chunk of the population that in healthcare and doctors and specialists, would have the tools to solve these problems. But, it falls back to the individual. So it's a case of self-management, self-diagnosis a lot of the time. And so we're trying to, we're trying to help people to be able to access the technology they need to be able to do that themselves. But, also from a healthcare perspective, where we can fit in and give the clinicians the tools. And, for them, the tools are, we can give them slightly different tools and give them access to more things sometimes. But giving them the tools as well to be able to give these patients a proper service, because they're trying their best, but it's certainly in Ireland and elsewhere, like doctors don't have a lot of time to be able to go through this with the patient. So it only becomes practical when it can be done where the doctor can empower the patient to be able to gather the information that's required, and the tools to be able to analyze it and to see what's happening. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to support that health from the home sort of idea, both from a consumer and clinical perspective.
I love this idea. I'm so big on the whole idea of personalized medicine, personalized health. I think that is going to be the biggest growth area in the next 10 to 15 years. But what you're developing makes so much sense, because we both know, yourself, you kind of underestimate certain things and overestimate and underestimate. So you overestimate how much you're working out and underestimate how much you're eating.
Yeah.
And it's the same when someone says to you, okay, go off this for now 6 weeks and then keep a food journal. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. And so what's been really interesting for us is, like, if you take any of the kind of, major culprits in terms of food intolerance, like you mentioned, lactose and dairy is common. And, you've got like fructose appears in a lot of different foods, and people see onions and garlic, whatever it happens to be. It's not like everyone has a problem with those foods. It might be a third of people, it might be a quarter of people, it might be half of people. You need to get towards a personalized diet. You need to see what you can digest.
Yeah.
And that might be different to everyone else in your family. That might be different even like your genetics is part of it, but like what's increasingly became more and more well known is that your gut microbiome is probably actually a much bigger factor in what foods you can digest. And like the crazy thing is, even like identical twins have very different gut microbiomes.
Really? That's so interesting.
So like they have like identical genetics, like, in a way, like it's like a clone. They've got the same genetics, but their gut microbiome can be completely different. So it's just that level of randomness, especially in early life, like very early life experiences. And it can mean that their gut microbiomes are completely different.
It's so interesting, because especially in Ireland, I think it's only the last 5-6 years that, if you're off milk, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have a glass of milk? Or certain foods, I go on, you will. Like, whereas now people are so conscious of this and there's so many options now. Whereas before, if you're off a certain thing, you went into a restaurant or whatever, the options are pretty limited. Whereas now it just feels like your product is coming out. It's out already, but it's just hitting the market perfectly, because now people are more educated as to what they're consuming. So your product fits beautifully.
Yes. It's a whole kind of, you mentioned a kind of like the food categories coming out, like milk's a great example, where you've got all of these milk alternatives and they're popular and they taste good and they're healthy. And, there's nothing inherently wrong with dairy. I mean, if obviously if you're a vegan, you're not going to consume dairy, but It depends on the specifics of your body. So I think that's definitely a very important message.
How did this all start? Because this isn't exactly a run-of-the-mill business.
Yeah. So it comes back to my wife again, and when I saw how difficult it was for her with between the procedures, between the medications, and it's funny. It's not even like her doctor was prescribing medications and it had no effect. In a lot of cases, it made her feel worse.
Okay.
So, and the gut is so connected to the brain that a lot of the medications, they will affect your mind as well. So you take the medication and you may just feel drowsy or confused or dazed or, so it's a really, it's a difficult one to medicate for. And, you know, we're not advocates, but we're also not against medication per se, but it's just that if you can identify a way of overcoming these problems that just fits into your lifestyle, that is low risk, because you know medications are not necessarily low risk all the time, that's a powerful thing. So so coming back to the story, I could see the problem there. And, you know, I was coming from an engineering background and I did some research. I saw, okay, breath analysis is a tool that's used. And it had been used in combination with something called the low FODMAP diet. Mm. So that's a kind of diet where you identify foods that ferment into gases in your gut. And so you're trying to identify which ones are not doing that and so adapt your diet accordingly. So I could see in the research that this technology has been used. So, and I kind of knew from my engineering work that you could build these tools, you could, this equipment that's been used, this could be done in a much lower cost, much smaller way, much smaller device. And ultimately that means that, okay, this is something that people can have, everyone can have their own device and use it in the home. And it's not just some like, really premier technology that costs thousands of, euros or dollars. This is something that's accessible to normal people.
What were you working on at the time? Were you working on something else? Were you working at a job? What was your background?
Yeah, so I'd came out of a PhD in engineering, which I'd been doing for way too long. but then I was working as a data scientist in a startup in Ireland, in Dublin, called ElectroRoute, who's since gone on to do really well. And was really enjoying it in there, but I could just see that, okay, this is just something like, if I'm not going to do this, who's going to do it?
Okay.
So, and even now, like, I'm sure we're going to have competitors down the line, but we're not, we haven't seen that yet so much. So, it's been really interesting.
How do you even start with something like that? Like, because maybe just describe exactly what it is for people that aren't familiar with it, and then tell me how you actually started developing it.
Yeah, so it's a small device. It's about the size of, it's hard to compare, but like if people know like a tin of mints or something like that. So it's kind of a small device, a little bigger than a box of matches. You breathe into it and it's measuring hydrogen levels in your breath. And there's some other parameters it's measuring, but fundamentally it's measuring how well the food you've eaten recently is being digested. So, like the food that's traveling through your gut at that time. The first thing that happened was really, okay, I could see there was potential with this technology. I just started prototyping. It was kind of like, I don't even know why I did it. Like looking back, I mean, it's sort of quite a challenging thing to make. And, embarked on doing it and I literally just had a circuit board with some components on it and just having Grace, my wife, just like breathe onto the circuit board and starting to see the readings coming out. And like, it kind of went through like a ton of generations actually. And I had it like in a little box, like this cute little cardboard box I had fashioned around this circuit board. And so she was able to use it on the go, and I could see it was working well. And I'm like, okay, this is a cool thing. Let's do something here.
I love how scrappy that is, because it's such a complex thing to build, but you built it using a cardboard box and a circuit board. I love that, because they're the stories that you want to hear, because I think people look at a lot of companies probably like yours and go, oh, what a cool thing, I could never do that. But like, you literally started with a circuit board and a cardboard box.
Yeah, exactly. So, and yeah, and then it was really just about, you know, getting a team together, and I was lucky to be able to connect up with some of my co-founders, and we got onto a program. So it was an accelerator program based out in China called Hacks.
How do you go from there to here to there?
Yeah. So I just thought that this accelerator program for devices. So if you're making a health device or whatever type of device you're making, they're accepting applications, and I knew like this is quite a big deal, and they accept less than 5% of people who apply. And so it was always going to be a long shot, but we applied, and actually, there was an Irish guy associated, there's a couple of Irish people associated with Hacks. And so got to speak to some of those guys, and, you know, we put in the application. It was just like a 2-minute video was application. And they liked it. And yeah, we literally a month later, I think we were in China. So it was...
How long was that for?
So... the program officially 4 months. We spent a bit longer over there, but it was incredible because, you know, I would say every month you were there was worth probably 3 months of development back in Ireland. So it was incredible.
What did you do? What was the program consist of?
So a lot of it was prototyping, speaking to design experts, speaking to different types of engineering experts who could help, manufacturing experts. Taking tours of factories that you could get the device made in, a lot of peer support, because this was like 20 teams or so from all around the world, really interesting people making everything from, I mean, there was a table tennis playing robot, there was a disaster recovery robot as well. So this thing that could kind of walk around, after some sort of terrible accident. There was a bunch of interest, like there was sort of self-adjusting headphones that would adjust to your hearing profile. So there's really cool things going. So like going into that atmosphere, you just had to step up your game, and you know, around these incredible people, and it's just a great start to what you're trying to do.
That sounds like such an unbelievable experience. So to be surrounded by people like that in an environment like that, the home of kind of great manufacturing.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think it makes it so much easier when A, you've got a group of people you're working with, like the co-founding team, and then B, just being in an ecosystem where you can flourish.
There's a lot to be said for environment, positive environment. We spoke about it before we went on air, in terms of who you surround yourself with and how they impact you is huge. At what stage was this in your journey?
Yeah, that was 2016. Like we founded a company and buying flights and,
Oh, was that early? Okay.
So this is at the very start.
Right.
And so, yeah, they gave us a bit of money, like $100,000 or something like that. But $100,000 in a combination health tech, medical device, data, artificial intelligence startup, that doesn't get you very far. I think we were we were paying ourselves something like $10 a day or something like that. It was very minimal. It's funny, in China that could get you quite far where we were based. So, that was very early. That was basically the start.
And what did you come out of that then with a prototype, or what happened at the end of the program?
Yeah, we had a much more advanced prototype. So we had something that we could go to manufacturers with and just figure out how to get it made. I mean, like for anyone who's working on a device or is thinking about working on a device, like that stage is like really hard. Like it's, you know, it's hard enough to get to a stage where you have what you might call a gold prototype, which is like what you actually want, like works like, looks like, but getting from there to something where it's manufacturable, manufacturable at a reasonable cost, is just much harder than you could ever imagine. So that was really difficult.
And how did you get past that hurdle?
So we had to rely a lot on, the most valuable thing for us is we just found a contract manufacturer who had incredible expertise, and we it was very difficult because we bounced between two or three of them. We started with, quite an advanced, quite a large factory that would produce, probably produce some of the products that people would be familiar with. They would produce a robotic vacuum cleaner, the Roomba.
Yeah.
But they were way too big for us. And if anyone's doing this and they're kind of having to select contract manufacturer, the main advice I'd give is to try and find the most specialist factory that's as close as possible. Like they've manufactured as similar as possible to you products. So like you don't want to get some big general manufacturer. You want to find somebody who's made something as close as possible to what you're doing. And for us, there's really only a handful of factories, in the world that would have been applicable. They're not necessarily big factories, but they understand breath and they understand these sort of devices very well.
When you say contract manufacturer, for anyone that's not familiar with that, what is that?
Yeah, so that's where you would get another company to actually do the manufacturing. So, I mean, I guess, and certainly for devices, for really sort of medical devices or consumer tech devices, it's very rare for somebody to manufacture their own device. A risky thing to do because it's, to manufacture at the standard where the defect rate is near zero, that takes many years and you're much better off trying, a big focus we have is, don't try and innovate in every possible way. So focus on what you have, where you have a speciality, where you have some special insight. I mean, don't try and, reinvent the wheel everywhere. That's too hard.
Especially when you're creating something brand new from scratch. You're creating something that's never been done before.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then when you got the MVP made, you got a test made, what was the next step?
Yeah. So we'd selected the factory. We were kind of, we're kind of ready to go to manufacturing. And, a little before that, we wanted to see what is actually the genuine level of interest in what we're doing. Because, you can
kind of help, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you can convince yourself. You can talk yourself, into doing anything. But, people close to you will kind of nod along and encourage you. But fundamentally, are people going to pay for what you're doing?
Yeah.
That's the ultimate test. And so we did pre-orders of our device through our website. So to see, okay, are people going to pay for this? And how many people is that? Is that going to be a small number of people? Is this going to be very niche-y? Or is this something that, when we put it in front of people, a large enough fraction are getting the proposition and I want to pay for it. And in the end, we'd got 8,000 pre-orders. So we got it was, over $1 million of pre-orders. So, and they were paid pre-orders. So
how does that happen? That's the question. Everyone listening to this is just going to shout at me, going to ask them how that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it does, it's a lot of work. I mean, you need to get the PR right. You need to have a digital marketing strategy and you need to do it as well. You need to, even just setting up your website, setting up your payment systems, even just having a plan to actually execute, because, you're making a promise to people to deliver a product by a certain date. And, you better have a good idea how you're going to do that. And, because it typically takes a lot longer and there's going to be delays. So, you kind of need to go in there with with enough progress that you feel confident you can do it with the money you're going to raise. And, yeah, just, and probably just build in extra time. It's going to take longer than you expect.
And cost probably more.
Yeah.
That's serious pressure to put yourself under, like 8,000 pre-orders. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. And the pressure definitely was there. I mean, even kind of, for us, we were like launching all the stuff. We had to build a website in a few days. Like there's one night, I think we were, there's three of us in the office madly doing each part of, getting the website ready. And, I remember I was working so late that like my eyes, like I literally couldn't see anymore. I stopped, my vision went, and I'm like, okay, I need to stop.
Oh, wow.
So I went and had a rest and came back an hour later, but like we were working.
An hour later.
Yeah. It had to launch at 8 a.m. Irish time, because okay. That was, midnight California time. So that's the date we had set. And so we had until 8 a.m. to get it done, and we got it done, but like, we try not to work like that anymore.
They're the stories. So they're the bits you remember, and they're the bits you're like, whoa, that was intense. But probably you look back on now going, it's kind of class too. So you've a million euro dollars in the bank waiting to happen. What was the next step?
Yeah. And so then it was really about going through the manufacturing process, and really in stages, because we need to ensure that you can't ship out. Like if you make a batch of 1,000 units and there's one problem that you missed, if you've just shipped out 1,000 problems.
Yeah.
So that's a big challenge. You like the level of quality assurance is just very, very high. And so we went through a process of making small batches of units, sending them to testers, hearing about all the problems. And, eventually we got to a point where we're very confident in the device and started shipping out to pre-order backers. But it was hard. Like, I mean, we made a ton of mistakes along the way. Like towards the end of 2018, we shipped out a bunch of units and we just didn't have enough resources to be able to deal with queries coming in, and then people were getting annoyed, and that's something that can happen. And
you're a victim of your own success, in essence.
Yeah. And that's a big thing that we learned, is that you kind of need to do things in a certain way that is appropriate for your scale. So kind of understanding that along the way has been, that's been crucial.
And it sounds silly to people unless they've gone through it. They're like, oh, don't be complaining about your good fortune. But, good fortune at the wrong time is bad fortune. If you can't keep up demand, or if you run out of units, or if you can't keep customers happy, then you've undone maybe 6 months' work.
Yeah. And your reputation, like right now, I mean, when everyone's transacting online and, you've got that record of customer reviews and all of that stuff, like that sticks around there for forever. So the expectations are very high as well. So anyone who's producing a device or software, you're competing against companies that have tens of thousands of employees a lot of the time. And so their expectations of how good your app is, how good your device, but how good your packaging is.
Well, you're benchmarked against Apple. Yeah. Inevitably, that's what you're benchmarked against, no matter what you're selling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'd hear that all the time. And so, Apple were producing millions of units. Mm. So they can do that stuff at a low cost, but it definitely becomes more challenging when you're a startup.
What did it feel like shipping out those first couple of units?
Yeah, I could say there's a number of stages along the process that are so fraught with risk and so terrifying that you just have to block it out. You have to kind of just have this cloak of this invisible cloak to block out the fear, because you need to keep executing while all of that stuff is happening. And you need to take be able to take the setbacks and not get carried away with the wins either. It's a long road.
It's hard, isn't it? Because you don't want to not celebrate anything, because then you can miserable. You don't want to celebrate too much because then you get too high. It's that middle ground. How do you do that?
Yeah. I think it's kind of it's training yourself, but it's also kind of it's reading your co-founders, and you know, sometimes you'll see where the people you work with need a boost, and sometimes it's just like obvious they need a boost. So like you need to celebrate when it's appropriate, but it's challenging because you know you're setting these like outrageous expectations for people. And yeah, and I like the only way I think you can do that is just, you know, meet those expectations yourself, because fundamentally if you're leading it, you have to, you know, you have to work at least as hard as anyone else in the team, and you know, for them to credibly be able to do what you're expecting them to do.
How do you follow up from pre-selling that many units?
Yeah, I know it's a bit of a disaster in many ways, because you're effectively booking like lots of sales, and then you know you don't have a new product. You know you're just shipping out that product. And you know, you're trying to find ways of generating buzz in different ways and kind of sustaining the momentum. But you know, it's became like the way we did it actually worked out quite well, because we did the pre-orders through our website, which, you know, had the chance of not, you know, just not generating enough interest. But we did have a lot of control. So we had, like, you know, if our initial attempt at getting press failed, it would have been fine. We could have done it a different way and tried again. If the way our website was set up just wasn't attracting enough interest, you know, we could change it. Mm. But you know, a lot of pre-order campaigns on, you know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo or things like that, there's more scope to generate like larger revenues, but it just might work. So like the first hour, the first day, like that's critical to campaigns like that, because it's do or die. So when you're the actual person who set up the startup, you don't like do or die moments. You try and move it towards a situation where if it doesn't quite work out, it's okay.
Yeah, well, that's what the whole entrepreneur experiment is about, isn't it? It's those tweak, 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 tweak. You never want those single points of failure where you're like,
yeah,
oh no, 3 years of work.
Yes.
In flames. Often through no point of your own, through bad luck. Something happens on that day that distracts the attention somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's fine margins.
Yes. Yeah, because like for a lot of the people with startups or thinking about doing startups, you know, like press is one of the most, you know, it's pretty low cost, and if you can make it work, the returns can be enormous. But you know, at an early stage, it's challenging, because like, you know, they don't really want to, you know, what do they have to go on? Well, like why would they believe that you are credibly going to be able to, you know, do something really impactful? So, you know, they might just decide to take the story another way and kind of, you know, because there's lots of, like, especially now, there's a lot of negativity surrounding technology. So
how did you get around that?
We were lucky that we have not gotten caught up in that. And, you know, I feel sorry for any companies who are at an early stage who have, but, you know, we've always been very careful around stuff like, you know, privacy, and, you know, we're like, fundamentally we're trying to solve a problem that's, you know, that's a really, you know, it really impacts people's lives in a very significant way. And hopefully that comes across, and, you know, it's but it's like, I think when it comes to startups, there's a lot of randomness. You can be really lucky, you can be really unlucky. And I guess if you've been at it for, like, we've been at it since 2016, you go through many cycles of bad luck and good luck, and you just have to be able to survive it.
That's beautifully put, I think, and just keeping going long enough that you know that that cycle will end and then the cycle of good luck will begin. It can be very disheartening when you are in a cycle because you do feel, oh no, something else has gone wrong. Like, and it's totally arbitrary, totally random luck.
Yes.
But you feel that the gods have aligned against you. Maybe I shouldn't do this idea. So it's really nice to hear that kind of message of, you know, you just keep going and this too shall pass. You will get through that stage of like, when you say press, was there certain things you did that you think, yeah, that was really impactful, that really was the turning point? Or was it just a continuous cycle of doing it?
I think it's, you know, it's very important to, like, especially when you're at a small scale, you have to leverage other people. So if you can get in front of, you know, the right agencies, for example, and, you know, there is agencies that will work for, you know, work for smaller startups, you know, who can't pay very much. And actually just, the people who do stuff exclusively for startups are the only ones that are appropriate anyway, if you're a startup. Press is sort of, you can actually get a long way by contacting the right press directly. Like, you know, and you can build up a bit of a list of appropriate reporters. But it's very important that, you know, you're targeting the right people. So spraying prey is not going to work. But if you come in with the right attitude and pitch it to the right people, you know, it could, like for example, we were going over to, you know, before COVID, we'd go to CES in Las Vegas each mm-hmm. year. And the first year we went over, you know, we had this list of, you know, different reporters, and we just kind of picked who we felt were the most appropriate, you know, people who would be most likely to report on us. We shut off, I don't know, 25 emails, but, you know, some of the stuff we got back, like we got a segment on the BBC, wow. You know, we got some, you know, really nice press from some of the tech publications. Because, yeah, I mean, if you find the people who would get excited about what you're specifically doing, it can make a big difference, because even like, you know, you have outlets that are, they're covering something very, it would seem like they're covering something very specific. But you know, the people who actually read that, there might be very many of them, but they're so impactful. There might be investors, there might be, you know, industry partners. So to being very conscious of that as well.
Quick little break to thank our sponsors and partners for season 6, Kiri's Car Store. Carstore.ie has the largest selection of used cars in Ireland. So it doesn't matter whether you're looking for a Toyota or a Tesla, they'll have it. Go to carstore.ie, put in whatever you're looking for. Then the team will give you a virtual viewing, very handy for the current times. Virtual viewing on WhatsApp, Zoom, whatever. You pick your car, buy it, and it rolls up to your door a few days later, delivered anywhere in Ireland. Go check them out. They're great people. It's a great service. Tell them Gary sent you. Now, on with the pod.
I think that's great advice, though, to do your homework. Don't just waste people's time as well, and have a great story to tell. I mean, the Food Marble story is pretty special. Like, I mean, what you're doing and how it works and how you impact people's lives, that's pretty special. Did you work hard on crafting that story?
Yeah, well, it's sort of kind of... it just sort of happened to a degree in that like it's all true, and so it's just kind of where you know, the hard yards of like things like fundraising, things like you know, trying to generate interest via PR, you know, you need to speak to a lot of people, and over time you get to, like, probably for the first while I never mentioned that you know, that it was related to my wife's problem, but it just kind of came up one time. Like we're doing this interview with a journalist, and she's like, no, but why? Like, why? Mm. Why would you do that? And I just mentioned it. And she was just like, I think she was almost crying. I was like, really inspired by that. And you know, it's
human stories, though. That's what we engage with. Yeah. We engage with, oh, he's just like me, or she's just like me, or I've had that problem, we've a mutual, like, that's what people really get. And I think a lot of startups forget that. They're so eager to tell you about the thing that they forget why it's impactful and why it's interesting.
Yes.
Like, it's an interesting product you guys make. It's a super interesting product.
Yes.
You talked about the States and kind of potential growth there? What's been happening on that front?
Yeah, so it's kind of a couple of strands to it. So on one side, like, you know, this technology has been used for a long time in healthcare in the US. So gastroenterologists and to, you know, to a lesser extent, other clinicians have been using breath analysis for testing different intolerances, for testing this condition SIBO I'd mentioned. And so there's been that opportunity over there. And now we're really, you know, we've had this inbound interest from some of these clinicians. So we feel like, okay, if we've got, you know, like respected, you know, clinicians contacting us via like seeing like, I don't know, a Facebook ad or some, you know, an article in some publication, that means that there must be a lot more interest there. So that's become a focus for us. I mean, we've developed this great clinical advisory board. So we've got some really significant people over in the US on that. And that's led to, we've got a couple of clinical trials at the moment, looking at kind of technologies that can come down the road and the next generation of what we're doing. So we've got one now in Johns Hopkins over in the US. And so that's really powerful. But then from a consumer perspective, you know, starting to talk to pharmacies. So, and some of those retail opportunities. And yeah, like the US is just like a, it's almost like a, well, I mean, it's enormous, and it's almost like 25 separate countries. Like, yeah, you know, like there's a lot of very populous states, and, you know, you could spend a long time chipping away at the US. So, huge opportunity.
The potential for growth is absolutely massive. Yeah. I'd imagine, you know, they're quite progressive in terms of their health and how they think about things as well. So it does seem like a perfect fit. Have you been direct to consumer so far?
Yeah, direct to consumer mostly so far. So we sold about 20,000 units direct to consumer. The healthcare offering that's really just this year, and we've been kind of, we've gone through the regulatory processes. We've gone through a lot of the sort of the details around insurer reimbursement. And yeah, so that's really just started to get going.
Amazing. And you're starting the fundraising trail again.
Yeah. So that's the plan. It's definitely an interesting time in the world. Like it's, you know, it's strangely, we're still sort of in this pandemic, but, you know, the US economy is, you know, roaring back into form, and you know, there's a lot of investment money going around. So we're hoping to, you know, for anyone who's in a startup, you know, always better to raise when you can and, you know, raise a bit more than you need. It just makes it easier. And because, you know, ultimately you need to be making decisions that lower your risk, because for you, if it doesn't work out, that's, you know, you've put your heart and soul into something for perhaps, you know, multiple years. And, you know, ultimately, whether it's, you know, you know, your current investors or different people, to them, you failing isn't as big a deal. So they'll suggest things that are much higher risk often. And, you know, it's for you, you know, like this can be all consuming. So you need to be making decisions that limit your risk.
I think that's a super important lesson to earn on, to end on as well, is that you have to trust yourself as well. Advice is brilliant, but you have to trust yourself, because at the end of the day, you're the one who'll answer. Yes. Where can people learn a little bit more about Food Marble?
Yeah. So they can go to foodmarble.com where we're on sale. So in Ireland, it's €169 through our website. And also available through Amazon. So if you're on Amazon Prime or something, that might be helpful.
Brilliant. And where can they, you're on social, are you on social personally, or are you on LinkedIn, or where is the best place to reach out to yourself?
Yeah, if you want to reach out to me, I'm on LinkedIn, all the usual stuff. There's only one, I'm pretty sure there's only one Angus Short in the world, but certainly there's not a ton of Anguses even, but.
Is it nice to be able to say that?
Yeah.
Angus, thanks so much for joining us and sharing such a brilliant story. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gary.
Hope you enjoyed today's chat with Angus. Really interesting character and very unassuming. Go to foodmarble.com to learn a little bit more about them. I would appreciate it if you'd refer the pod. Go to the link in the bio and description below, and that will tell you everything you need to know. I'll see you back here next Monday for the Idea Lab. Have a great week.